And so I ask you if you are disciples of Christ. And so if I'm talking to a group of disciples of Christ, then it should be like no other group that I could talk to. It should be different. Whatever I say should be taken differently than if I was just talking to any group, any other group that I might be talking to. A disciple, or when you are discipled by someone, you learn from them and you adhere to their teachings. So have you been learning from Jesus? Yes. Have you been adhering to his teaching? Yes. I hope everybody said yes. When you are discipled by someone, then you follow them and you adhere to their teaching, similarly to where John the Baptist taught his disciples to pray, and Jesus' disciples were jealous and they said, "Hey, why don't you teach us to pray?" Notice that they didn't begin praying the way John the Baptist's disciples were praying because they were not being discipled by John the Baptist. They wanted to hear from Jesus, right? And similarly, we also are disciples of Jesus, I certainly hope. Now, today we're going to learn a bit about discipleship, and also along the way we're going to learn about Jesus. Discipleship. If we are disciples of Christ, then we should follow him. And there is a text that we want to cover as quickly as possible today that is often misconstrued, just as often misunderstood. And so we'll go to the book of Luke, chapter 14, in my brand new Bible, by the way, that I got for Father's Day. It's the first time breaking it in. And my wife began to be a bit embarrassed of my old tattered and torn, tested, tried, and true Bible. But that Bible got me through 130 hours of Bible study on the internet and 3.5 years of this church. Amen. So it did its time. Praise God, and I'm grateful for the gift. Amen. So that's Luke chapter 14, and we're going to be considering verses 25 through 35. That's Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 35. Now, when we consider this text, the context is one that Jesus' ministry has become rather mature, and he's attracting lots of listeners. But those listeners are not just listeners, they are becoming followers. Jesus is gaining the opportunity to have, if he wants to, his own mega church. How do you think Jesus will react to this opportunity to have many, many, many innumerable followers? The crowd wasn't just there to listen to Jesus any longer. The crowd began to follow him wherever he went. And therefore, what? They were would-be disciples. Would-be disciples. Now, wouldn't it be great if the creator of the universe came down to earth and many, many, many people, the majority of people, chose to follow him? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if we chose, many, many, many of us, to follow him? Wouldn't that be nice? But we're going to get a chance to see how Jesus reacts to that. I know how most of us would react to that. I know how most people today react to that. They really love that. As a matter of fact, if you go to most pastors' conferences, the thing they focus on the most is how to get and keep followers. Not necessarily how to feed them, not necessarily how to lead them, not necessarily how to love them, but how to get and keep as many followers as you can. The more followers, the better it feels to preach. The more followers, the more amens. The more followers, the bigger the reputation. The more followers, the more money in your pocket. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that? Do you think Jesus cares about that? We're talking about his disciples here. I'm talking to his disciples. Do you think Jesus would care about that? No. Okay, well, let's just see if your opinion lines up with what the word says. So we'll begin at verse 25, and it says, and there went great multitudes, that's a lot of folk, with him. Now, it doesn't say he spoke before a great multitude. It said there went great multitudes. So whenever he went here and there, a crowd of people followed him. So if you're following Jesus wherever he goes and you're listening to every word that he says, all that's left is for you to do it and stick with him. And you are then what? A disciple. But verse 26 says, and this is Jesus speaking, this is now what you get to see is Jesus' reaction to all of those folks following him. And we're going to see how similar Jesus is to the way we react today. He says, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren, meaning brothers, and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Now, I started out by asking you, are you disciples of Christ? I got a yes from, did I get a yes from, were there any abstainers? Anybody say no? Okay. So you're all disciples of Christ. And I'm going to say again, he says, if any man come to me, I see you following me, but if you really want to come to me, and if you don't hate your father and your mother and your wife and your children and your brothers and your sisters, and guess what? Even your own life, then you cannot be my disciple. I'll quickly look at verse 27 as well. He goes on to say, and whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Come after me is another way of following me, coming after. I walk and you come after me. You trace my steps. By the way, not the other way around. So those are some pretty harsh words, huh? Difficult to hear. And if you believe that God spoke the King James Bible into existence and that you must take the King James Bible literally, then you're left up a creek without a paddle, having to hate your mother, having to hate your father, and not knowing which verse to believe because there are those who that deliberately or very strictly contradict what we just read. We've learned in the past few weeks to sacrifice for our wives, have we not, brothers? We've learned to submit ourselves to one another as husband and wife, and the emphasis there was on the wife. If we had read further, we would understand how to relate to our bosses. We would understand how to relate to our children. And certainly last week, God taught us, men, fathers, and parents, to listen, to learn, and to love. That's quite contradictory to what we just read here, is it not? What do we do with that? Jesus says, if any man comes to me, he's got to hate his family. He's got to hate his very life. And he's got to bear his cross. In essence, you can see in these two verses, I can break it down for you in simple terms and say he's saying you've got to live for me and you've got to be willing to die if necessary. But let's look at this verse that is so controversial and see what Jesus is really saying so that you're not tripped up by this literal interpretation of the Bible as if God spoke it as it reads here. So if any man comes to me, Jesus is saying, if you're going to come to me, you've got to hate your father and your wife and your children and your brothers, etc. Understand what this really means. This word does mean hate, but it's not quite the kind of hate we're used to. It is you will hate relative to something else. In other words, you will love something else more. You get it now? Now it all starts to make sense. If you don't love me more than your mother, and I'm just telling you, there's some folks who love their mother more than they love God. If you don't love me, now I know you're following me. I know you're listening to my words. I know you're in the audience. But if you want to be my disciple, if I'm going to invest in you personally, if we're going to have a one-on-one relationship, not just in the audience, but when it's all over, when I really break it down and tell my heart to you so that you can tell it to the world, when I really, if I'm going to ask you to do something special for me, then I need you to love me more than you love your mother. I need you to love me more than you love your father. I put the children in your care, but I need you to love me more than you love your children. There are parents that are spoiling children today because they love the children more than they love God. They're giving to children more than they should, and as they do so, whether it be time, money, energy, effort, they take away from God. I can't do God's work because I had to be over here taking care of that one. We love people more than we love God. This is what Jesus wants to talk about today. Not the only thing, but he says you've got to hate them relatively speaking. You've got to love me if you want to be my disciple. Now, it sounds good, which is what was going on in this audience with these crowds. It seemed good. It even felt good. But Jesus is not looking for a megachurch. Here is a man who's got all these people following him, and he whittles it down. He could have had throngs of folks continuing to follow him and listen to him, but what does he do? He does the opposite of what we would do today. He tells them what they really need to hear. He tells them something that he knows is going to make the crowd a lot smaller. It looks like Jesus cares more about quality than what? Quantity. So he says, you've got to love me more than you love them. Not just the people, but you've got to love me more than you love your life. Now we know, don't get this twisted. We want to fully expose this thing. And I'm going to try to take my time and hurry at the same time. How's that? Now, in the next verse, we know that he says, take up your own cross, whatever burden I give you that you are prescribed, take up that cross and follow me. Do what it is, whatever heartache is required, whatever challenges you may face, take up your own cross and follow me. Go where I say go, when I say go. But before that, so he's not talking about that. He's not talking about dying for him yet. He's still talking about living for him. So if you're going to hate your life, you've got to know what this is saying. There are three kinds of life in the Greek, is it not? Do we know that? For God's glory. He is not talking about bios here. That's the next verse. He's talking here not about your life, your blood pumping. He's not talking about that life. And he's not talking about Zoe either. He's not talking about that spiritual, everlasting life that we are hoping to have. He's talking about the psuche. All of the matters and concerns of your life. Your bills, your job, your career. So not only do you have to love him more than you love the people in your life, you've got to love him more than all those situations that got you all befuddled, frustrated, worried, dominating your time. Oh, yeah. He is saying, if you're going to be my disciple, I've got to come first. I got to come second. I got to come third. I got to come fourth. And yet, here you are having to submit and sacrifice for, and listen, learn, and love with those folks around you. There's no question This is why Paul said, I'd rather that you be as I. I'd rather it be better. I'm not envying you because I can commit myself to God. I can do whatever he's told me to do because I'm not encumbered with all of these other things. You are my biggest burden. I got to keep writing these letters to you and traveling all around. I got to defend my name. But even that, Paul defending his apostleship was part of psuche, part of the matters of life that he had to deal with. It wasn't part of his bios, that's his blood pumping. It wasn't part of his zoe, because that's what he's going to get after he leaves here. It was part of his psuche. So he says, you've got to hate even your own life. So if that PhD or whatever degree matters more to you, we're going to be able to tell. If that job matters more to you, we're going to be able to tell. That position matters more to you, we're going to be able to tell. If that auxiliary or that other hobby matters more to you, we're going to be able to tell. If your side piece business, matters more to you, we're going to be able to tell. If something else matters more to you, we're going to be able to tell. But listen to what Jesus is saying. I'd rather have fewer people where I really matter than to have a whole lot of folk. If you're trying to do anything serious, you'd be better off with fewer folks who are more committed. Fewer people that are more committed are far better than a whole bunch of folks. In any way, you can't disciple a big old crowd of people. How can you disciple? What you end up having to do is have a bunch of programs and you got 10 different pastors on top of the key pastor. So is the discipleship happening? Is the oil truly flowing? Or does it start to miss some folk? If you're going to have 10 pastors, you better have a while injecting whatever God's vision and truth is that you have into those pastors. So we're talking about discipleship. Jesus understood, I can't disciple all these folks. He started out with 12, did he not? He started out with 12. And then when he went out, when he sent out the extra 70, now he's got 82. And if you go to the upper room, there were 120. Now, you know how many folks heard about Jesus after over those three and a half years. And at the end, when it boiled down, there were 120. Quality over quantity. Amen? So Jesus says, you've got to love me more. Do you love him more? Do you want to love him more? Yeah. There we go. There we go. I figured the second one would get more response. But to be his disciple, now he says, you cannot be my disciple. Now we said we were his disciples, but he's just said, if you can't love me more than you love those other things, what if, by the way, he loved his life more than he loved you? He had plenty of time to think about it. In the garden and on the way while he was being spat upon. I mean, he could have gotten out of it anywhere along the way. What if? What does that make us? Flawed, sinful, bags of bones is what it makes us. And so we matter most because we matter to God. And he chose to give his life for us. So that's the psuche, right? Now let's go to that last part. So if you don't love me more than you love all these people and things and situations that has you so beat up and bogged down and just about anything that's getting in your way of fulfilling what God wanted you to do, even if you said yes and you got on the train, even if you have to grab the back of the caboose, at least you're on the train. Okay? And now it's getting a little bit difficult. You had that victory and you felt good about it, but it's like, whoa, what did I get myself into? Now you start second guessing. Now you start questioning. Uh-oh, the wind starts blowing. You got to hold on to that bridge because faith is what? A bridge. All that suke. He says, unless you can handle all that, you can't be my disciple. That's some pretty hard medicine, right? That's some pretty tough stuff. But understand what I want you to hear from him here is that he's not talking about exousia here. This you cannot actually is the same as being you're not able to. And it's not exousia. He's not saying you don't have the authority to be my disciple. He's not checking a box to give you the authority. He's talking about the actual ability. The root word there is dunamis. You actually can't physically, in reality, you can't be, you won't be able to handle it. You won't be able to successfully be my disciple if you don't love me more. You might have an idea. You might be in the crowd following him everywhere he's going. You might want to be, but you won't be able to be. You might say you are at the beginning of the sermon. You might tell somebody if you're asked, yes, I'm his disciple. That's great, but you won't be able to live it out if you don't love me more. So that's why when your difficult decisions come, you're going to be living with, you know, fear, doubt, worry, and more importantly, confusion. Because you know what? Because over here is all that other stuff, the people, the relationships, all the psuche. And over here is Jesus just as clear as day. But all that other stuff matters more to you. What are they going to say? How much money am I going to make? How am I going to pay my bills? What if they don't like me no more? What if people leave? He says you won't be able to. You won't have the power to. So you may as well just forget it. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you want. That's a nice idea. That's cool. The form of godliness is nice. We're talking about the very power thereof. If you don't deny all, if you don't put Jesus first, it doesn't mean just throwing people out of your life, but it means putting Jesus first. What does that mean? You know how that manifests? Decisions. Uh-huh. Decisions. Every time, all day long, decisions. Mm-hmm. Because the actions come as a result of decisions. Every act you do, you decided it before you did it. It's all right up here. Do you love him more? And he's already died for you. Do you love him more? Verse 27, whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. If you cannot do what I've asked you to do, even though it's going to be hard, even though at least in their time, you might have to give your life. And the cross meant nothing. We now talk about cross to bear as just a term. That means, well, you know, the thing, I'm a burden I got to live with. At this time, that was literal. There was no idiom. There was no saying about crosses to bear. He was talking about, I want you to imagine you may have to go to the cross as a criminal because of your work and association with me, because you are a disciple. And infamously, we know Peter's moment came. And those big bad words, he couldn't back up. But Jesus already foresaw that. And he says, but when you come back to yourself, strengthen your brothers. Because I know you're going to come out of that. Satan wants to crush you. And oh, you're going to be crushed some. But you're not going to be crushed irreparably. You're going to come back. So you're going to have to bear your cross. You're going to have to really be down if you want to be my disciple. Now look, I'm not going to say I'm originating this, but I agree with Jesus. I agree with Jesus. I would rather have people who really love Christ, not me, Christ, who are really down with Christ, who would do anything for Christ, who care more about what Jesus says, and if I'm off, more than what I say. I don't think I've been off yet, but if I have an off day, listen to him, not me. You got to care more about Jesus than your mother, your father, because let me just tell you, people can mess you up. People can mess you up. Your parents that love you give you the best they know how. But sometimes God's telling you to go do something and your parent is the very one in the way. Because they can't hear it because it don't sound like what they were told. They can't see you doing it because it's not something that they were told they could do. So you can't love that more. Oh, but what will mama think? What will daddy think? What did Jesus say? Now, we read about Abraham, and Abraham left his family to do what God told him to do. And we call that faith. And what about when we're faced with that? I want you to be on this job, not that one. Yeah, but I make more over there. And wasn't that a blessing? Yeah, at the time it was. Now I'm telling you to move on. But then we confuse. Let me see. I don't know. Which voice is God? The one you don't want to listen to? Oh, yeah. I can tell you just about 100% of the time. The one you don't want to listen to. The one you want to take a double take. The one you need to research more. The one you don't want to do. That's God. If you don't know nothing else, if you have no idea, you just got to make a decision. Go against the grain. Go against your flesh. You'll be right almost every time. Oh, I'm taking time. I can't make the decision yet because I'm weighing some things out. Which one don't you want to do? Remember, all the way back from Genesis chapter 3, Satan whispers sweet nothings. He tells you what you want to hear. Who wants to be told you can have all this but that? Who wants to have limitations? Who wants to have restrictions? But who listens to the first part? You can have all this. All we hear is but that. We live our lives, we have all you guys have your voices and you're taking them for granted, but all you can think about is what you don't have. All right, the next couple verses, Jesus begins to give a word picture to explain to them what he's just said in verses 26 and 27. He says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counts up basically the costs, whether he has sufficient to finish it? Which one of you doesn't sit down to make sure you have enough money or materials to build the tower before you build the tower?" I mean, how many of you don't do that? He's appealing to our nature, right? Now, there's things he's going to tell you to do, and you count it all up and don't seem like you have enough. That's not what he's talking about here. He's giving them a natural carnal example so they can understand. How many of you, you know, do not count up the cost before you build a tower? Now, there was a real example, by the way. Pilate had built the tower and he couldn't finish it. So they had a contemporary example. Oh, yeah, I remember when Pilate did that. In verse 29, lest happily, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all will behold or look at it and begin to mock him. So now, which one of you? I just told you now, if you want to be my disciple, you got to be really down. You got to be serious, shown off, loving some me. And you got to forsake all that other stuff if you want to hang out with me. This is the requirement for me to invest in you the way I need to invest in my disciples. And so he says, to drive the point home, how many of you, if you're going to build a tower, wouldn't count up the cost first? Because you end up like Pilate with everybody teasing you. Because you couldn't finish it. He gives them another example. He says, "Or what king going to make war against another king sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that comes against him with 20,000? Or else while the other is yet a great way off, he sends an ambassador," basically, an envoy, "and desires conditions of peace." Also, there was a contemporary example. Herod Antipas had this situation going on because he had to have Herodias, okay, his niece, took him away from his brother. And so there was war because the father wasn't having it. And the father was an Arabian prince. And so there was a war, and he did lose. So they had a contemporary example. So it wasn't just a story. They were like, oh, yeah, I don't want to be mocked like Pilate. Oh, yeah, I don't want to be in a situation where I think I'm big and bad, and then before the time comes, I'm about to be beaten down, and I got to whimper and put my tail between my legs and say, can I have peace, please? So you don't want to be like that. So he's appealing to that very natural, carnal, understandable nature to say, you don't want to get in this. If you're not really in this, you want to count up the cost. Because if you start and you don't finish, you're going to look really, really stupid. really stupid. So don't get into this. Don't try to hang out all tight with me unless you really are in this to win it. And you really can love me first. And you can let that other stuff go and you can finish this race. Amen? Amen. So Jesus is saying he's willing this thing on down. And he used this example really to weed out the weak and the uncommitted. Because understand or listen carefully to what he just said. He just gave you an example. He's just told you you've got to really be down with him, right? But the examples he used, the only thing at risk is not your life. It's really your ego. Now, I have to admit, Herodias had some life issues there. The other example was it's your ego that's at risk. Oh, my God. He built a tower and it's only half. He can't, how's he going to protect his land? He can't overlook, see his land and see criminals coming and see thieves coming and see, you know, dangerous animals coming. It's only 5 feet high. He couldn't even finish it. Ha, ha, ha. And the same thing with the example of the king. Yes, his life was in jeopardy, but the point he was making was the humiliation of realizing I can't take that dude. So I've got to beg for peace. Both examples are actually getting at the ego. I want you to understand something. He just said you got to be really down to follow me. And the examples that he gave are all ego and pride examples. So what's he weeding out? He's weeding out the weak and the folks who are really not committed. But just think about this. When I was studying this, this hit me because I actually have thought these thoughts before. And this is not an easy thing to accept God's call. It is and it isn't. It was easy to say yes to God, yes, open up a church. But sometimes it's hard to keep going. Okay? And yes, if I decide, you know what, besides feeling God's disappointment, all right, I can't do this no more. Too many hard heads, too many hard jobs, too many late hours. Wouldn't that look stupid? Like, God never told you to do that in the first place. Now, I don't want that, but that's not what would hurt me the most. Now, understand, even if somehow that were to be my outcome, to understand what's in my heart the most, you need to hear this. It would be worth it. For me to say yes to God, the embarrassment would be worth it. It's better in my mind, for me to go into it with all I have and give him all I have and try. If somehow or another in my humanity, I somehow give up, the humiliation would be worth it for me. Now, the truth of the matter is, in those moments when you have not one more ounce to give, God's footsteps end up in the sand. That's the truth of it. But I'm trying to tell you the mentality that I'm talking about. The thing is, if the humiliation wouldn't stop you from trying, God knows you have the commitment. That was weeding folks out. If you would not start because you might be laughed at, come on now. Really now. Just think if how many people left and how Jesus was like, man, I knew they didn't have it. I knew they didn't have it. Oh, my goodness. Now, he gave two examples. You better count up the cost. You might be laughed at. You better count up the cost. You might have to swallow your pride, have your tail between your legs, and ask for peace. Is that all? Wow. Jesus knew who he was talking to, though. And while we laugh, when we don't do what God's told us to do, the things that we are fighting up against that keep us from doing what he told us to do, they look just like this to God. We think they're all heavy and serious and, whoo, that's why the decision was hard. If you were in my shoes, it would be hard for you too. He looks at it like this. So if you aren't down with him, don't go there. All right. Now, we're almost there. He says, less happily, you've laid the foundation and you can't finish it. And then he talks about the king finding out he should have thought twice. He should have thought three times before he went out. Because he did not have what it took. And then he says in verse 33, so likewise, reemphasizing the point after he's given the examples, whosoever he be of you that forsake not all that he has, he cannot be my disciple. Now, do we still have a room full of disciples? All right, I could just see Jesus now. I would get up on that cross, but it's too high. I would, but it's too painful. I would, but they won't appreciate it. No. I'll try to get up on that cross for you. I don't know what your options are if I don't do it, but I'll try. So Jesus is understanding that there's only a few folk. If your grandson ran out in front of a truck and that truck was about to get in, would you try to run out and try to save him? We love people more than we love God. There's a whole lot of stuff that we do to get in the way of what we're supposed to do because we are not trying to support people and things and institutions. We do. Because people always do what? So Jesus ain't got no problem whittling it on down to the 300 or whatever it is. This is Jesus telling you how he rolls, okay? Jesus is laying some heavy stuff down, but he's trying to teach you what the rules of engagement of discipleship are. So we're at 34. Now he's told us that if you don't forsake all, then you can't be his disciple. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Now, what does he say after that? He talks about salt, does he not? Now, we've heard about salt before. We believe we are the salt of the earth. And without us, you know, the earth doesn't have that special ingredient that Jesus was trying to put there, right? Similar example for a whole different purpose. Okay? So let's see what he says here. He says, salt is good, but if the salt has lost his savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? So if the salt has lost its saltiness, then what good is it going to do to season the meat or the food? What's the point? He says, it is neither fit for the land, because salt was used to a certain extent as a fertilizer, or for the dunghill, because when you had the poop there, you threw some salt in there and it helped the fertilizer. Salt could be used that way. It says, it is neither, this is salt that's lost its savor, is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill. I mean, what? How much lower can you go? But they cast it out. They cast it out. Why? Because it's useless. So Jesus is saying, if you start out good and sound all good and say all the right stuff and in with the crowd and following me everywhere I go, you found it every prayer meeting, you found it every service, morning, noon, PYPU, night service, prayer service, all that sounds good. Sounds like you're following me, but are you my disciple? If I start asking some hard questions, will you have the right answers? And they shouldn't even be hard questions. If you're my disciple, then you learn from me and you live by what I say, right? If you're my disciple. Now, in this particular case, Jesus was talking about some serious stuff where there was going to ultimately be lives at stake. Truly, not just livelihood, but lives at stake. And later on, there was a time where Peter was talking that talk. And he said, well, this is a different time now. It's not the same as it was before. And so he is letting us know if you're going to be his disciple, he expects you to be seriously loving him more than you love the stuff that gets in your way. He is reading our mail, but lovingly. He's telling you what your mail says, hoping, just as he says here in the final verse, he that hath an ear, let him hear. So as you try to live out what God has finally gotten you to do, that decision that you made because you finally didn't want to miss that train, and now you got to stick with it, he's trying to let you know, I understand the things that's going to get in your way. It's going to be your family. It's going to be your friends. It's going to be the job. It's going to be all that stuff that you care about more than you care about me. The same stuff that kept you from getting on the train sooner in the first place. Having to grab the caboose at the last second. Having to handle that window of opportunity before it closed at the last minute. I know all those things that you love more than you love me. And so the challenge and the ultimate question is, are you willing to truly be a disciple of Christ? Are you willing to follow him and do what he says no matter what? Are you willing? Now, there's no lives at stake yet. Yet. But as we go closer and closer to the end times, do you plan to live long enough to get there? And if so, are you going to be ready to deal with that? Are you going to be ready to deal with that? If you still love stuff more than you love God, you may as well take that mark right now. You may as well take it right now. If you love humility, if you care more about humiliation than you care about Christ, you may as well take the mark right now. You may as well join the other side right now. You know, there are many who live during times where there wasn't anything major going on, but some of us end up living in times where something is major going on. Something major is going on. And so if you want to cruise on through life and you don't really have to do anything important or serious or dangerous or difficult, then be in the crowd. But Jesus said, I'm talking to disciples. And so my challenge to you is this. Not ask you to rearrange your whole life, but we have consecrations. And we try to avoid the things that get in the way of our quality time and relationship with Christ. And so my challenge to you is really easy, actually, or at least it's simple and straightforward. And that is to choose that one thing. I'm not asking you to change everything overnight. But as soon as I say that one thing, you know exactly what came to your mind. And extricate it from your life. Extricate him from your life, or her from your life, or it from your life. You know who you're thinking of. You know what you're thinking about. Because these are the things that are going to get in the way. They are the things that you're loving, caring about, caring for, catering to more than Christ. Now, look, I just told you a few weeks ago about the windows of opportunity. Don't let God get riled up about your loving other things more than him. Don't let him get on that. Now, he chooses. I don't know whether he's going there. I don't know until just about a few minutes before you know what God wants to talk about. So I'm not saying I'm going to bring us. I don't choose. I'm just saying, he's saying nicely, I did it for you. I did way more for you than you could ever do for me. I ain't even asking you to get rid of all that mess. But you know that one that you're thinking of? How about we not have to consecrate over that again? How about we stop playing pity pat? How about we get serious? Because I want disciples. I want hardcore. Give me the 300. Lapping like a dog. Serious. Hardcore. We'll go down for the cause. I don't need the empty people filling up the seats. I don't need the crowd. Don't need the throngs. Don't need that. That feeds ego. This is not about ego. This is about handling God's business.